everybody. This is Anna Gonzalez. You're listening to Mosaic. If you look at the Rhode Island flag, there's only one word on it. Beneath the golden anchor, encircled by golden stars, one for each of the 13 colonies, there's a blue ribbon with four golden letters. H-O-P-E. Hope. It's most likely taken from the verse in the New Testament that reads, "Hope we have as an anchor of the soul." And that is where our guest today gets his name. John Hope is a rapper, writer, and public speaker whose life growing up as a child of African immigrants in Providence has made him see the best and the worst the city has to offer. His latest album, Hope All Is Well, is streaming now. John Hope, thanks so much for being here.
Yo, thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Cool. I just want to talk about your latest album first. Yeah. Hope All Is Well. When did you start working on it and what was the plan for it and how do you think it came out? How's the response to it right now?
Sure. So I started probably like late 2019, a few months before the pandemic. I had probably a different version of it. I had recorded some records, but I didn't quite find a direction just yet. And then once the pandemic hit, as a creative, as an entrepreneur, you know, many of us had to pivot. I think with all the things that were happening, you know, in terms of the social unrest, just the angst that people had centered around this pandemic, it just gave me some fodder to kind of re-examine, you know, self-examine what I was going through and whatnot. And so for me, Hope All Is Well, we hear that phrase a lot and it's usually tends to be like tongue in cheek. You know what I mean? Oh, I hope all is well. You say it in an email or what have you. But I looked at it as the phrase as an opportunity for me to reflect. So in other words, when someone says hope all is well, I'm examining is all well in my life? You know what I mean? And so once I opened up that Pandora's box, this is what you get. You get the end result of, you know, 9 records that really examine and sort of leave behind a lot of things. You know, prior to Hope All Is Well, a lot of my music, a lot of my visual content was rooted in my neighborhood where I come from, which is Arbor Glen. It's on the North End in the Wanskook area. I examined why I have such a strong connection and Hope All Is Well, the cover is in the basketball court in AG. I had to let that go. So it's a departure. It's a departure because, you know, I had identified my trauma. I had identified all these things that I was going through. And now it's time to let go. So it's kind of like a departure towards bigger and better. You know what I mean? As far as how it's been received, it's been amazing. By far, you know, my most well-received project. It's definitely aligned. I have put out projects before where it might have been critically received well, but the numbers didn't add up. I didn't have all the streams. I didn't have the views and all this other stuff. All that nonsense, the bullshit that I really don't care about. But now I got all that stuff, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, there's a spotlight on me and I'm excited and, you know, I got the baton and I'm running. So much pain I wish I lost. Funerals, I kiss that cause. Pay my dues and I split that cause. Away with words and I won't get caught. I was notified when the money talks with a bad ting from the Ivory Coast. Yellow hair with the brown skin. She in public want my private parts. Tolerate no disrespect. 100 wolves coming at your neck. You see the splash, peep the drip, the ink is dry, all we need is this. I've been meaning just to tell you that my soul is now sold. From the muddy waters running with that homicide.
I love that hook. Who's singing the hook?
That's my brother Rags, man. Super talented artist right here out of Rhode Island. And he's the MVP, man. He delivered in a way. I mean, that you can't.
It's the tone and everything. It's infectious.
Yeah. It's instant. That's one of the things I love about that record. You know, that it doesn't take a long time to it hits and you're right. You know, you're rightly connected, you know, so.
And I love the video for it.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. And the part about it that I love is obviously the photos of your family that are in it.
Yeah.
And like first photo, I think is your mom.
My mom in the red.
In the red.
Killing it. Yeah.
A queen. insane.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about that and like your connection with your family a little bit. And yeah. Are both your parents from West Africa?
Yeah. So my father is from Liberia. He's still in Liberia. We don't really have a relationship. He wasn't really around or present, rather. My mom, she's from neighboring Sierra Leone. And so my mom, she came to this country raising myself, and I have a brother and a sister. And they have the same father. They have their own father. He unfortunately passed. He's in that picture, too. He's from Nigeria. So I always tell people I'm all three because he was actually present. So there were times I would call him daddy, you know what I'm saying, and whatnot. So, yeah, I had like a real colorful, you know, I share it in my music, but I had a colorful upbringing and whatnot. So my relationship with my family, what is normal, right?
There's no normal.
Right?
That's
the best way to, yeah. But me and my mom, you know, she had me young, so we have like a very close relationship, friend, like, you know, it's funny, like when I was growing up, and I would, you know, I would curse, you know what I'm saying? I would swear. And a lot of people thought it was from rap music, but it was from my mom. You know what I'm saying? My mom is just like this God-fearing woman. But at the same time, we'll tell you, yo, clean your shit up or some shit like that. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. So my mom is just, she has that. She has that duality that I love.
So with your mom being from Sierra Leone,
Freetown. Yeah.
What? So how did that, like, growing up with a mother from Sierra Leone, yeah, and a stepfather from Nigeria, like,
yeah,
what, like, did you feel African? Did you feel, like, Black, yeah, African-American? Like, what,
yeah,
how did you think about yourself?
That's a great question. Earlier on, there was a lot of self-hatred, you know, that I had, you know, because in the household, my mom, even to this day, she does not... You know, what we're talking about is the diaspora, right? She does not identify as Black Americans. Like, she would always say, don't hit me with this shit. I'm African. You know, we're not doing that. You know what I'm saying? Your friends, they do that. They, you know what I mean? I was born here, right? Born in Providence, but inside the household, it was very much African, you know, Afrocentric type of household and rhetoric and themes and things of that nature. The dichotomy, though, when I would go outside, you know, and jump off the porch, you got to think about the climate. This is 80s, 90s, where we're still, just as a people, as a culture, as a society, you know, Blackness isn't appreciated, right? Particularly, specifically, different hues, right? Like dark-skinned people. And then just the relationship with Africa. You know, I don't know how old you are, but, you know, I'm from the era of the Sally Fields commercials, you know what I'm saying? And, like, you know, there'd be these infomercials and Sally Field would be next to, like, a young African kid with a fly on his nose and, you know, if you have a dollar for unfufu, you know, dial, you know what I'm saying? So, like, the imagery, the representation was very desolate, you know? So all that stuff plays into your psyche. And so how did that manifest in my Black American friends, you know, making fun of me and just, you know, what we would do, crack on each other, you know what I'm saying? You know, you know, African booty scratcher, tar baby, all that type of shit. So I would get that. And then even when I would come to school and I would bring, like, my African dishes, I would eat in the corner because, like, if I open up that Tupperware, my Black and white friends, you know, what's that? What's that green stuff? It'd be cassava leaf, you know what I'm saying? I would get asked those questions. And so a lot of it, you know, that played in how I saw myself. And that really lasted for a very long time. You know, my middle name is Mondubu, right? But for the longest, I would tell people my name was Michael, just on some, you know, ignorant self-hate type shit, you know what I'm saying? So it took me a long time, probably until, you know, late 20s and when I was 30, that I really embraced. I had put out a mixtape called Mondubu, you know, and it was really a symbol of, like, me embracing my fullest self and not having to compartmentalize and things of that nature. Because I would get also those microaggressive or, like, backhanded compliments. Like, yo, Hope, you're not like those other Africans. You know, you speak English or, like, you know, you clean or whatever. Whatever, you know, trope or aesthetic that they assigned Africans to, because I didn't have that, or I didn't have like this thick accent like Dikembe Mutombo.
And is this other black friends?
Other black friends. That was the irony. Like, I would get that sort of prejudicial treatment from my black American friends, you know what I'm saying? And then I would participate in that by just essentially disowning my African, you know, culture, you know what I mean? And it manifested one time, you know, my mother, we were trying to go back to, we went back to Africa. I was like 10 years old or 11. We went back to Africa. We were attempting to go to Liberia, but however, we ended up going to Senegal, Dakar. And so I was there for about 2 weeks and I hated it. Because I was so Americanized, I didn't even want to eat the food. I would have to tell my mother. I was crying. I was like, "Mommy, I want Burger King." So the people there, and I, you know, I felt so bad now, and I'm much more, you know, sophisticated. They would have to go into the village and go into the city and go get me Burger King. So, like, it would be things like that, or, like, you know, even the cultural, like, conflict, like, out there, when you eat, when you participate in dinner, so it'd be like, you know, the three of us, there'd be a huge bowl of rice and different meats. And you would wash your hands and you would eat like this. You would put your hand and make the rice into a ball and eat. You know, I'm looking, I'm like, yo, what the fuck is this? Like, what, you know, like,
where are the forks?
Yeah, where the forks at? Yeah. We ain't doing this. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? I'm 10 years old. I'm like, nah, you know what I mean? Because I was so, really, it's white supremacy. You know what I'm saying? That's the overarching thing. But, like, I'm over here, like, just self-defeating. You know what I'm saying? So, like, that's how it really manifested. And, like, you know, that really prompted the record African Boy on my album.
Yeah.
You know, I held on to that record for 10 years. That's a 10-year-old record.
Really?
Yeah, I wrote that like 2009.
I love that track. Can we listen to it right now?
When I was young boy, my mama told me they would mistreat me, they would provoke me. And when I say they, I mean the ignorant, I mean the arrogant, cause I am African. And they would say things, I wasn't happy, cause I was different, my hair nappy. And all the young girls, they wouldn't bother, cause you are lighter, and I am darker. So many times I cried, my last name long, and they wanna know why. Cause these feelings that I would harbor, you call it grief, I say cassava.
I'm Ana Gonzalez, and this is Mosaic. We just heard African Boy by John Hope, a rapper and educator from Providence and the child of West African immigrants. I want to talk about your name.
Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
John Hope,
yep.
Stage name.
Correct.
Legal name,
yeah.
Different.
Yeah.
But what? But I feel like I don't even know. Okay, yeah, I want to know how you got to John Hope. And then I feel like I don't even know what your actual, because you say that your last name's long, your middle name is what is it again?
Mondubu. Yeah.
What is your full given name?
My full birth name is Harrison Mondubu Grigsby. But when I talk about that line, you know, my last name long, I'm really speaking about, you know, my brother and my sister. My brother and my sister, they're Nigerian, so remember that. They go by Kevin and Mimi, right? That's what my mother named them. But their full name is Olufemilayo Kevin Minowono. Olufumilayo Fumi Minowono. A lot of people, they didn't want to pronounce it, right? Your last name long, you know what I mean? And you just think about how ignorant that statement is, right? If we could say Beethoven, if we could say, you know, Tortellini,
Tchaikovsky.
If we could say Tchaikovsky,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You stop at this, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, so that's my full government name is Harrison Mondubu Grigsby. Growing up, people would just call me Harry or Harry G, you know what I mean? I was always intrigued. I've always been a multi-passionate, multi-talented individual. So I always looked at like Ice Cube, Queen Latifah, Will Smith, Tupac, those guys and girls who can exist in multiple mediums. And obviously we see how successful they are, particularly acting and rapping, right? So I was like, yo, I want a name that can live in multiple mediums without me having to change, you know, my name, you know what I'm saying? Like we don't really call Will Smith the Fresh Prince anymore. You know what I'm saying? Right? You know what I mean? So I'm looking and I'm studying and I'm like, all right, Hope is the state motto for Rhode Island. And at this time, it wasn't really cool to rep Rhode Island, you know what I mean? Because we're in the shadow of New York, right? We're in between New York and Boston. They have, you know, rich history of hip hop. Rhode Island is sort of non-existent. So the mentality when I first started coming out was like, I gotta rep Rhode Island. Like, I kind of was wearing it with a shield, you know what I mean? So I wanted to, but I didn't want to do anything corny and be like Rhode Island man, you know what I'm saying? Like on some lame shit, right?
I'm,
you know,
so glad you're not Rhode Island. I'm a little sad, but I'm glad it's a lot more longevity. Yeah.
Exactly, mm-hmm. You know, so I wanted to make something that could be received worldwide, but have a connotation that people can recognize. It really didn't have anything to do with like the John Hope Settlement House or anything like that. I know that's really the easy thing to do or say, but it really didn't. I just wanted something like, I was like, okay, Brad Pitt, Tom Cruise, Jamie Foxx, those are all fake actor names. I'm like, John Hope, like, you know, and it rings, two syllables. I'm like, word, let's do that. You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of how I arrived at John Hope. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Can we play THS right now?
Yeah.
Okay, I want to listen to THS.
Yeah. I like the song selection, you know?
Only the best.
That's it.
Shorty left me because she thought I was finished. She said I'm demented. I had to leave because my soul ain't replenished. Feel the scars from the words every time that you said it. These are pipe dreams. Don't rap, Rick. Just dead it. That helps you. It's what I rely on to escape from my family and friends who swore they had faith. Screaming they support, but they never came to a show or bought a song. Whenever I dropped the tape, it was perfect strangers who protect me from danger. It's so ironic.
We talked a little bit about, like, at the beginning, about the past year and kind of the civil unrest of the past year and the murder of George Floyd and and protest in the street. How did you experience that time? Like, because I know it's really easy to be to just assume everybody was doing the same things or like, but yeah, like, how did you and how are you still dealing with that time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was unfortunate, obviously, you know. Excuse me. I mean, that to me, I would liken that to, you know, I was modern day lynching, you know, like, you know, that was a murder, like, in front of our eyes, right? How I received it, I mean, it hurt, you know. I definitely had a moment of, you know, reflection and grievance, like, man, this just disdain for the country's inability to live up to its principles, you know what I'm saying? And then there's like the residual effect of seemingly there's this awakening and, you know, the protests and all this stuff. And, you know, for me, a lot of it was like performative. You know, this isn't the first time. We've seen this, you know, so why does it have to take this for all of a sudden for, you know, institutions, corporations to put out statements, hashtags, you know, about diversity and inclusion and all this stuff. So and here we are a year later and, you know, some of these things, I still feel like it's performative. I still feel like a lot of it is like window dressing, you know, to a degree. Has it fostered conversations? Yeah, you know, but in terms of like real, legitimate, actionable items of change and things of that nature, I don't know. I don't know. You know, we still have, there's still a resistance that we see that permeates, right? You know, just take, for instance, you know, Stop Asian Hate, right? The reception, you didn't hear, you know, well, stop all hate. You know what I'm saying? Right? You didn't hear none of that shit, right? There was no, like, resistance towards it. It was a uniform acceptance of, yes, agreed, stop Asian hate. We're not telling you to stop anything. We're just saying, like, we matter. Like, black life matters. Like, the sentiment and the way it's been co-opted to a degree and just manipulated and recalibrated for people's agenda to again create this divide and this like fear mongering is, we're just saying we matter. That's simply what it, like, we, you know what I mean? 9/11 happened, never forget. Slavery, oh, that was in the past. It's like, oh, 400 years. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's just the contradiction that exists is so blatant. And so, you know, I had my issue. I was my first interaction, you know, I was beat by police at 12 years old. Like, you know, me and my cousins, right? I don't know. You know, for me, it's less about those extremes and how, what about the daily things, right? Like in our education, the way that, you know, young black and brown kids, especially girls, are adultified, right? They're adultified, which leads to increased suspensions, disproportionate expelling, disproportionate criminalizing, right? I mean, we're seeing like 5-year-old young black kids getting arrested for age-appropriate behavior. So those are the things, because that's all connected to the George Floyd situation, right? It's all connected. There's that, housing, just so many different things. So for me, it's just like, you know, even now when we talk about CRT, right, you know.
Critical race theory.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like that in itself, like, so you could teach us, you know, Thanksgiving and this guy named Chris founded something, discovered, right? You know what I mean? But for us telling the truth, which in turn will better shape the mindset of these future lawyers, future, you know, these are our students. This is the future. Part of that self-hate that we talked about with my relationship with Africa was because the first time you taught me about myself, I was a slave, right? Not knowing that I was this like king and that I had this rich history, right? And the only time I learned about myself was for 28 days. And it was Martin, Malcolm, and Harriet. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That was it. Just three folks. That was it. You know what I'm saying? All dead. All come from deficiency. None of the teachings about myself are strength-based. It's all deficit-based, right? Civil rights, you know, slavery, you know, overcoming.
Being a martyr, yeah.
Being, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, warranted, but like, what about some strength-based, you know, like, there's so many other things that, you know, that can really shape the way, not only that I see myself, but I think what people fail to realize about racism and implicit bias, and or not even implicit bias, but deliberate bias and explicit and intentional discrimination, is that you rob, like white people are robbed of the opportunity to learn too, right? Like, you
Absolutely.
Know what I mean? To learn and have this healthy exchange. Right. If we're only learning through this white Eurocentric prism, you rob even white people of the opportunity to, you know what I mean? Because
Absolutely.
Then you give them, they think that they invented air. Like, you know what I'm saying? And like, you know what I mean? Like,
absolutely. Yes. Yes.
Right.
Is that, is all what you're saying? Is that part of why you started the Hope Scholars Initiative?
Yes, it's part of it. For me, it's a little bit more nuanced. But there's still some correlation. For me, it was about the hip-hop identity, the hip-hop sensibility.
How would you define a hip-hop sensibility?
Sure. Hip-hop sensibility is just the way you talk, the fashion, the dress, the aesthetic. When they come into these schools, right, and there's nobody, and these schools don't really, they don't really have an understanding. Their rules and regulations and policies ostracize and disenfranchise before we even get to homeroom, right? So your dress code, like there are students, young girls who have micro braids, right? Like Janet Jackson and Poetic Justice, like that's beautiful, right? They were expelled because of, like, not because of behavior matters, not because they have inadequate academic performance, but because of their existence. Right? Because of their existence. So when you have that happening before anything else, that is an issue. That's a problem. That leads to, you know, low retention rates, you know, withdrawals, you know what I mean? And then I'm not as connected to my scholarship, right? I'm not as connected to being, wanting to learn. Like, I'm like, man, if you don't care about me, like, I don't want to be here. You know what I'm saying? I say all that to say that's what prompted Hope Scholars Initiative, which is to create programming, events, and just overall a space where students can learn and be themselves and where their hip-hop cultural identity is validated and affirmed. You know what I mean? Because once you do that, now you're more connected to your scholarship. Now I'm like willing to learn. Language isn't a barrier. My culture isn't a barrier. Dress isn't a barrier, because me as a facilitator, as the instructor, I understand, appreciate your Tupac shirt. You know, you wearing a bandana. I know you're not in a gang. You know what I'm saying? You got the hoop earrings. That's what's up. With me, respectability politics are out the window. So, like, I don't care if you got a PhD or not, right? Like, that's the beauty of hip-hop education. It's like, you know, because in academia, there's all these elitists. It's all about how many letters you have after your name. That determines your value. Whereas hip-hop ed, we remove that, and it's much more asset-based, community-based. So we value the barbershop that is like a pillar in the community. We know there's value there. We know there's entrepreneurship there, right? You know what I mean? And more times than not, they don't have degrees or none of that shit. You know what I'm saying? To me, that's the beauty, because now we declass and remove the elitist tone of Black excellence. Because a lot of times people want to ascribe Black excellence to like Oprah, Obama, you know, this classist shit, which they are. But what ends up happening is, as a default, you know, they're not, you don't see Obama every day, right? You know what right. I mean? Like, you know, Black excellence is my mom, right? Black excellence, you know what I mean? You get what I'm saying?
It's the same thing that you were saying about, like, Black History Month only focusing on these big, larger-than-life, like, tragic figures who right. led thousands to freedom. It's like, how does that apply to an 11-year-old?
Correct.
And, yeah, I think you're entirely on point. Yeah, it's very interesting to think about reframing it. It's like, what is an attainable way
yeah.
to, like, empower young Black kids right. or older Black people? You know, like,
yeah.
all of us.
All,
yeah, everybody.
Yeah.
Don't judge me and none of my people, because nothing was ever.
Is there anything, any tracks that you want to play, like, any records that you want to play yeah. that you, like, think are, like, have a special significance to you?
You know, one of the songs that's, like, a people's favorite that I always appreciated was Dirty Wings mm. off Savage Beauty, because it really encapsulates, like, my childhood and, like, this, like, a lot of my songs are reflective. I won't even say in light. I'm processing, but I appreciate just the way people connect to that record. And so I talk about, like, just, like, being the kid in the classroom. Because I went to, a white school. You know, I went to all-white school growing up, like, you know, Catholic school. So I was always the only Black kid.
Is that your mom stressing education again? Making sure you went to that private school?
Exactly. Yeah. But not knowing the effects, you know, because, you know, she's coming to this country, like, under this gaze in this red, you know, rose-colored, white is right, you know, type of thing, you know what I'm saying? So she put me in this school, and, you know, there was a lot of, you know, again, those, like, microaggressive moments, you know, that I would endure that would chip away at my identity. So, you know, Dirty Wings really talks about that, you know what I'm saying?
Sleeping at the feet of my cousin, I smell the sock aroma. We just trying to make it to breakfast, my auntie reading Romans. She praying for something we never had, lunch money or even dads. Both missing it made me mad. Only Black in the classroom, the child of the have-nots. Nappy-headed token who's spoken to like a mascot. For February themes, have you seen my self-esteem? So let me speak in layman, we just trying to make it. Treasures you forsaken, trash is truly sacred. So are you taking payments? Are you taking payments? Dudes I wanna pay and myself I have forgave them. So please do the same for me, and just smile for me carefully. I know 10-year-old boys who look weathered. Lord, please wash away the dirt on every single feather, let them fly.
John Hope, thank you so much for being on Mosaic today.
Yo, thank you. This has been good.
Yeah.
Yeah, great conversation.
And that was my conversation with musician and educator John Hope. To learn more about John Hope and hear his music, visit our website, mosaicpodcast.org. Mosaic is a production of the Publix Radio, edited by Sally Isley, produced by James Baumgartner and Pearl Marvel. Our theme music is by Bryn Bliska. Website support by Jeff Mateus. Tori Malatia is the general manager of the Publix Radio, and I'm Ana Gonzalez. Thanks for listening. See you next week. What does your mom think about your music and your...
Oh, she loves it.
Yeah.
She loves it. So now that, you know, I'm up and I'm, you know, successful doing my thing, she appreciates it more. But at first, you know, she was stressing education. Like, she was like, yo, you know, what is all this? You know what I'm saying? But now, like, she gets it. She shows all her coworkers, like, when she sees me in a newspaper, like when I got the Boston Globe feature, like, she was so excited, or, you know, being on Sway, or, you know, MTV, because, you know, that's what, you know, those mediums, she understands those, you know what I mean? For me, those are great, but those are more for her, you know what I mean? But yeah, she loves it. She loves it. She'll every time she calls me, she's like, let me speak to John Hope, like, just on some joking, you know what I mean? So yeah, it's good. It's good. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.